Mami, mami, ma.
Ulwanda.
Mama, darling.
Maminko.
Mom.
This is Mother Mine. Reflections on our mothers and how they've shaped us from ordinary people across the globe. One, open.
My whole life, I was more open with my mother to talk about anything. She was the one who talked to me about sex, about drugs, about virtually everything. I remember, 14, 15, we were in the kitchen cooking or something, and she just said, "Gu, have you ever smoked marijuana?" And I thought to myself, I'm sick of lying. I'm too old to keep lying about this. It's so insignificant. So I said, "Yeah." How many times? I don't know. I can't remember. And from that point, there was no more taboo about it. We went to Amsterdam, me and my brother. She said, "Okay, did you go to the Bulldog?" And I said, "No, not the Bulldog. Did you go to any coffee shop?" "Well, to some." I was around 20, 21. Can't remember exactly, but I was in university already. And they were arguing a lot. Well, my whole life, my parents had trouble not arguing with themselves. There was some cheating along the way, so I don't really know the details, but I know there was some cheating on both sides. So they got a little separated. They were talking about divorce, and she came to me to speak, "Hey, I love you guys, but the relation with your father is not that good, and I may have a relationship with another man." It was kind of shock. I couldn't really figure that out. I just told her, "Okay, I'm grown up. My brother is also grown up. We don't have nothing to say to you about your decisions. Or we don't have to have an opinion on that. I just hope you're happy." And then, I think 2 or 3 days after that talk, she was at the airport. She was a stewardess. I can't remember exactly what kind of thing I had to bring her at the airport, so I was driving there. And by the way back on the highway, I saw her car. She was already in the flight inside the airplane, and someone was driving her car, and was a man. And at that point I said, so there really is someone, and not just a ghost, a faceless person. There was a dead guy. But in the end, I don't really know what happened. My parents just came back together, and well, they survived the pandemic. For her birthday, that was 2 days ago, I asked what kind of gift she wanted, and she just said, "Gu, just give this money to whoever needs. This pandemic struck so hard that so many people with hunger and much worse situation than me, so just give them." That's the kind of person she is. She tries to help everybody. She helped her sister when she had some financial issues, bought her a house, bought her a car. I was a kid, but she really helped a lot. She saw her sister as a mother, because my mom lost her mother when she was 15. So when I was 27, yeah, I was almost married with the ex-wife, and I cheated on her with a woman from São Paulo, and this woman got pregnant. I took the DNA test, it confirmed it was mine. So she said to me, "Okay, if you don't want to get involved with that, I won't force you." And I said, "Okay, My priority now is to reestablish my relationship. And for 5 years, my son's five first years, I had no relationship with him. And my mother never agreed on that. And it was really hard 5 years because we have expression in Portuguese that you have a goat on the room. I don't know if there is something similar in English, but it's that situation when something is uncomfortable among a group of people or some people, but no one wants to talk about that. And every time during these 5 years I met my mom, we just had a goat in the room. I think I am a journalist involved in social issues, a social democrat kind of socialist person because of her. I'm very autonomous person because of her, even though she tends to interfere and the way I do things with all my heart reflects a lot the way she does.
2. Ornamental.
When I was little, we called our parents by their names. I called my mother Alda and my father Rusty. We lived on a farm with two other families, and there were 8 kids, I think. And we all called our parents by their names, and we called, you know, all the adults by their first names. And then when we moved from there, we just continued it. And then later, I think at least the 3 oldest of us kept that up pretty much, but the younger kids tended to call Alda Mom. And in my later years, I called her Mom when I was talking to her. But if ever I talked about her, I think I always called her Alda until the last few years of her life. Near the end of her life, I called her Mom and referred to her as my mom. Early in my life, I don't remember a lot about her. Growing up, we had maids until after my father died. And so I don't remember a lot about her. I don't know what she did during the day. If we stayed home sick, one of the maids would take care of us. And she pretty much let us do anything we wanted. She didn't put a damper on anything we did. Once when I was late teenager, my brother and I took a bicycle trip from New Hampshire down to Woods Hole and then took the ferry over to Martha's Vineyard. Mom wrote a note that she had notarized that said, Amanda and Anthony have my permission to travel wherever they want, and something to that effect. Anyway, we took it with us. I wish I still had it. She wanted me to have things like permanence and wear frilly dresses. And fortunately, I had a younger sister who sort of took over that role. So when Toby got to be the age where, you know, she could be feminine, Mom sort of let me be. I tended to wear boys' clothes, baggy things. I played with the boys. I wasn't home a lot. And when I was, I spent a lot of my time reading. My father taught me to play tennis. The things I really valued, I think my father taught me. How to use his tools and what a good sportsman was like. And at one point, Alda had me take ballroom dancing because she thought that I should learn how to dance and be a girl. And I hated it. My father traveled a lot, so he didn't actually know about all this until one time when he said he'd walk me to dance class. And as we were walking, he asked me why I was so quiet. And I said, well, I hate dance. I'm always picked last, and I just hate it. So he said, well, why do you go? And I said, because Mom said I had to. So he said, well, if you don't like it, you don't have to go. And we turned around and walked home. So he stood up for me for things like that and kind of saw me for who I was, which I always thought Mom didn't. She loved beautiful things. She loved decorating her house. Our house was always elegant in a certain way, but not precious, but it was beautiful. She cared about colors and how things looked. And she was very attractive. She was quite beautiful and attractive and attracted men and liked being attractive to men and had a sort of coquettishness about her. So one of the things that I was clear about was that I did not want to be like her in that way. So I didn't want to be attractive to men. So when I met Flynn, who's my husband, I didn't try at all to have him like me, although I liked him a lot. But the friendship part of it was important at first. And then later we became lovers, and that was wonderful. But I was careful not to let my mom in too much on my relationship with Flynn because I didn't want her to spoil it for me. My mother and I never really fought. It was more of a sort of a standoff. I don't ever remember yelling at her or her yelling at me, but we disagreed on a lot of things. When my father died, I kind of thought that the wrong parent had died. I needed some authority. I needed somebody whom I thought was strong. And I didn't think my mother was that. Although in retrospect, I think she actually was. Near the very end of her life, when she was in her 90s, she and I grew very close. And I'm glad for those last few years with her. I learned a lot from her, about her. And we could laugh and talk about what we knew of each other and what we didn't know of each other. And I could see more of who she was. And as I reflected, I could think about who she was and the wonderful things she had done. She was actually quite a remarkable person. She raised 7 children. She did theater, staging theater, and she did a little directing, community theater. She had a love for words. She loved words. She was a poet, and she knew how to use words. And so there were lots of things about her that I didn't pay attention to, but that in thinking back were quite remarkable. And also, the more I got to know about her, the more I really appreciated the kind of way she led her life. She led her life the way she wanted to lead it, and I guess I lead my life the way I want to lead it. Before she died, I told her I wanted to plant a tree in our yard in honor of her, in memory of her. I said, what would she like? And she wanted an ornamental plum, which was a typical thing. It's a beautiful tree, but it's kind of delicate in a certain way, and it has beautiful pink blossoms. And I look out on it every day, and I love it. It almost died at one point. People told me to chop it down, dig it up, and plant another tree, but I couldn't quite do it. It's like I couldn't quite let go of my mother. So I, not knowing anything about pruning, I took some pruning things to it and cut out all the rotten parts or the parts that weren't working and really trimmed it way back. And if it didn't just come back. Sort of like my mother. My mother almost died at one point, and everybody thought she was going to die. But she didn't. She survived and lived to be 99. So I look out on it every day, and I love it. And I think of her. And I think of her. She's like that tree. That tree's like her.
Three, strength.
She will always wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning to pray for us. And you know, our house used to be so small such that I would hear the content of her prayers, and she would even at times get really aggressive and calling us in her prayers by name, and then, you know, just declaring things over our lives
And that went on for as long as I can remember. We can sort of say that she used to be our alarm, because after she wakes up and then starts praying, then I won't go back to sleep. You know, shortly after she's done, I'll wake up and then start preparing for school. So that is what I remember the most about her. And I sort of think it is a practice she hasn't abandoned. I think it is part and parcel of who she is. I called her, and I still do call her Olwanda. Olwanda means stone, a big, humongous stone. And that for me translates to strength, because I can say that my mom is the strength of our family. I can say that she is the one that has managed to, you know, hold our family together, bring us together and help us fight through the challenges, help us overcome, help us cry together in the bad times and celebrate together in the good times, but always, you know, being there for everyone. And, you know, just that amazes me. And it's the reason I call her Strength Plus. There was this time that my mom was sick, very sick, I would say. That is the first time I remember seeing her being vulnerable and being in need of help. Because other times she had always been the one doing stuff, being there for us, being the one taking care of us when we were sick, being the one attending to our needs. But that time she seemed so helpless. And I even think I could see it in her eyes that she didn't like being there. She didn't like us seeing her in that state. Because I think she had raised us up to know that, you know, mother means strength. And therefore, for us to see her in pain and see her suffering, it was kind of an awakening for us. It also reminded us that she indeed also needs us to be there for her at times. I think there isn't a day that goes by without me thinking about her, but there are times that I can really say I really always visualize her, and this is when I'm going through tough times or challenging situations, and I always ask myself, how would mom want me to respond to this? Because at times I go through stuff and you know, when I'm at the verge of giving up, I'll ask myself, what would mom say if she hears that this is what I did in this situation? And I always think I know the response, and that is what exactly I do. So many of the challenging circumstances or difficult or hard times that I've gone through and managed to overcome, she has had a big influence in most of them, even without her knowing, because of how she raised us. And she didn't raise us up to be feeble. She always told us that we need to be strong, because the world will not be strong for us. There was a time when I was in campus, things really got thick for me, and I kind of, you know, found myself in a depressed state, and I went silent for about 1.5 weeks, and she didn't hear from me. And so she really got worried, given that she was in the village and then I'm in the city, and then she had no way of reaching out to me to know what's really happening. So when we eventually talked, and she really insisted on finding out why I was silent and what had happened, that really drove her mad. She was raving mad, and she really got angry. She didn't believe that I could go for that long without letting her know what I was going through. And that is the time that I really saw her angry at me. And eventually she had to make me promise that such a thing will never happen again. Because to her, she said it was a silly mistake. And I remember her saying that is not how she has raised me. She always said, this is your skin, embrace it, and don't try and fit into someone else's skin. Because at the end of the day, you'll end up busting. I don't know why she would always say that. She would always say that if you try and fit into someone else's skin, you'll end up busting out of it. And I kind of found that hilarious. But I think it's contributed a lot towards me being the person that I am. And not just me, but also my siblings. She will never compare us even with each other. The kids in the family, there's no time that she ever compared a single one of us to the other or referred to the other as being strong or and the other as being weak or that kind of thing. She has always, you know, groomed us to be the people that we ought to be and not to be copiers or to try and fit where we don't belong. Not looking up to other people in the family and then trying to be who they are, but always pursuing our own roads.
4. Everything.
You know, she raised me on tarot and crystals, and there were prisms hanging from our windows that shed light on the wall, and she did a home birth for all of us back when it was actually illegal to do so. And the attending women at my birth were two witches from her coven. And she talked about her experience as a hippie and what drugs she tried and why she wouldn't recommend them. And we talked about sex, you know, as a normal human experience. And we talked about love and intimacy and how sex and love and intimacy are not always related. And we talked about everything. I can't think of a single thing that has ever been off the table for us. I know that I am an extension of her. It's not like I started over. Because we always talked and because she shared so much of her life experiences with me, I feel like I didn't have to make all the same mistakes that she did. I feel like one real difference between us is just my confidence in who I am. And I think that took her a lot longer to find. As a child, I have a lot of images of her tucking me in at night. So that was always a thing, and it went on for years. Like, I remember still loving to get tucked in as a teenager because it was like our chance to reconnect at the end of the day. So she would come in and she'd sit on the edge of my bed. And when I was a little kid, you know, she would rub my back, and sometimes she would do like a guided meditation or sing a song. And then when I was older, it just became these conversations. And as a mother now, I have a lot of like amazement for her for never rushing me through it, or at least I never felt that way. I feel like sometimes at bedtimes now I'm like, come on, let's go, you know, because it's the end of the day and I'm exhausted. And I remember those endless, you know, bedside talks and, you know, wanting one more back rub and one more song. I feel like I've really seen her as a person for most of my life. And yet there's this turning point in your 30s where you really get it. Like, you get that not only is your mom a person, but that like she probably had no idea what she was doing when she was raising you. And I think that comes in part from being a mom myself and just feeling these moments of complete and total lack of direction and realizing that she was experiencing that as well. So my parents got divorced when I was 8, and the next few years were hard. My mom went back to work, so she had been home with us up till that point. So she went back to work, and we were in this huge transition. My dad got remarried really quickly, and I was very angry at the time, like so much rage inside of me, and we would battle. I remember just slamming my door. We would fight about clothes. We would fight about cleaning my room. We would fight and fight and fight. And for a number of years, it seemed like the two of us were not going to actually make it through that period. And then after my freshman year in high school, we went on a trip cross country and we went to visit family in Washington State and Oregon. And we spent 6 weeks together. And that was such a game changer. That was really where we cemented the closeness that we have now. It was really special. And it was unexpected because I was a teenager and I totally didn't want to do this trip with my mom. I thought it was going to be so lame. And to this day, those are some of my favorite memories, and not just of her, but just of like my life. My mom has this very particular smell. I'm going to go there because, and it's a good smell, and it's sort of like a crystal shop. Like, that's what my mom smells like. And of course she can't smell it, but everyone else can. And my mom really likes scarves, like the beautiful, like Indian scarves. She likes to wear them in the summer and like all year round. It's like the lightweight ones. And they always smell so wonderfully like her. And so the joke is always like, if she leaves one at our house, it's like coveted by me and the kids because it just has the utmost Mimi smell. I see my mom in the way that I cook, in the way that I can craft recipes from thin air. I see my mom in the way that I parent. I see her in the way that I'm a little bit messy and sometimes a little bit gross, but not too gross. I see her in my artistic side. I also see her in my fear and doubt because I carry that with me too. I'm sometimes scared of greatness, and that's very much something that she has. And also this deep and profound sense that the only thing I've truly ever wanted to do and really ever felt like I was exceptionally good at is being a mother.
Thank you so much for listening to Mother Mine. I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of our contributors. If you'd like to submit your thoughts about your mother, we'd love to hear from you. Just visit ourmothersourselves.com. That's ourmothersourselves.com, and click on Mother Mine for all of the details on how to participate. I'd like to say a huge thank you to each and every one of our Kickstarter backers. Your generous contributions have made Mother Mine possible, and I am so grateful. Mother Mine is created by me, Katie Semro, and produced in conjunction with Our Mothers Ourselves.
Buenas noches, mi amor. Duerme bajo el rosario.